Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hello and welcome to the Panic Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks, the Point Forward podcast. It is a dark time for Milwaukee Bucks fans, and not just because the sun is disappearing behind the moon. On Monday, as we record this, the Milwaukee Bucks are in dire straits. They've lost four consecutive games, three of them to some really bad competition. The Washington Wizards, the Memphis Grizzlies, the Toronto Raptors, three of the worst teams in the NBA. The Raptors had lost 15 in a row. The Bucks followed that up with a loss, a fall from a head loss to the New York Knicks at Pfizer Forum on Sunday. The schedule is very tough going forward. There are only four games left before we get into the postseason, and yet the Bucks are still, at the moment, the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. So my name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm joined by Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, to gauge exactly how much we should be panicking. What is real? What is fake? What is a legitimate concern? What is something we should not be spending any time on at all? Because 6 weeks from now, we might forget that the regular season even happened at all. Jim, I don't really know where to begin. These three losses, like, I can't believe I was even bothered by a loss to the Houston Rockets a few years ago in 2021, where I harped on that. I mean, that's small potatoes compared to the run that the Bucks have been on. And I really do kind of just have that question of what's real, what's fake. What is legitimately a concern that you would have as somebody who watches the Bucks closely? And what is noise that people are caring way too much about? I know that's a big question, but I really feel like that's where I want to begin. So I give you the floor. Help me out here.
Yeah, you know, look, it's look, this team wanted to peak, right? Play its best basketball heading into the playoffs, and that is not happening. Clearly, you know, losing four in a row, 5 of 6 to three of the worst teams in the league. I would, on one hand, like to summarily dismiss it as, okay, they pounded the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was like the signature win of the season. And then they just were like, all right, we're ready, you know? But, you know, within that, within these losses, there just hasn't been some of the good play that you could be like, okay, well, okay, whatever. Outlier, statistical, this, that, injuries. But if you look at Giannis and Dame two-man game, or you look at Chris Giannis and Dame three-man game, or, you know, good three-point shooting, like, you're not really seeing some of the in-game improvements that, you know, on that West Coast trip, for instance, where they lost, you know, they only beat the Clippers, but it was fine because clearly the two-man game between Giannis and Dame was working at a level that it had not been. So you were kind of like, okay, that's looking good. Look, I they're still the number two seed in the East as we record this. It's a little tighter now, JR. Like, it's one game ahead of New York and Orlando. They've got the Magic twice here. You know, the Cavs went from 3 to 5 in a matter of hours. So it's really tight. You know, they've got to play these next few games, and they've got to win a couple to not tumble to the 5 seed. Like, that's in play right now. And so I can't just sort of toss it to the, oh, whatever. Like, no, it's they could lose home court, you know, if they don't do something here. You know, with a back-to-back against the Celtics and Magic, they go to Oklahoma City, and then they end with a weird matinee in Orlando. And the Magic are playing for stuff. You know, this is their sort of ascending season. They're not taking things easy here the last week. So, look, they're still a playoff team, but I think it's fair to really look at it with a critical eye, as our Lori Nickel did at jsonline.com, JR, and just say, okay, something isn't right. And I don't know if anyone can quite put their finger on it just yet, which is, I think, a cause for concern for the team and obviously the fans.
6 of 7 they have lost, and includes a double overtime loss to the Lakers. That was pretty dispiriting. That's a game they had in hand and they lost. So even when they're not playing sort of the bottom tier teams of the NBA, they are They have not played well, but like you said, there is that Oklahoma City game that they'll rematch with Oklahoma City here in these last four games. We'll see where they're at this point. What is the role of injuries? If we're going to be the most charitable here in reading this as they basically turned off the switch and are coasting in, and maybe that they got over their head doing that, but the injuries have still played a role. Chris Middleton is still a part-time-ish player. He left the game on Sunday. Damian Lillard was gone for quite some time. Giannis is mostly in there. And again, like, to me, that's kind of one of the bigger issues of the whole season is that Giannis has been playing at such a great level. You know, he's not going to win MVP. I think that ship has sailed, but you're getting really good Giannis and it's still not enough. That's probably a concern. How big of a role is having the personnel available? There is still the question of if those three guys are clicking on every cylinder, are they in a conference finalist? You know, like, is that still the only ingredient that matters in the sauce? I don't know the answer to that exactly at this point, but how much of a role are you thinking the injuries are involved here?
I mean, it's a role for sure, JR. Look, one of the reasons they were 30-13 with Adrian Griffin, yes, the schedule, quote unquote, was easier, but as we've just seen, they've lost to the three worst teams in the league, right? So they kind of, you know, crap down their leg at the last three easy games they had. But no, like 30-13 under Griff was in part because the big three played most of those games, whether Chris was on a minute restriction or missed a back-to-back. I think Dame only missed one game with personal reasons, a couple with an oblique. Giannis, I think, played almost all of them. Let's go back, JR, to the March 20th game in Boston. They lose by three to the Celtics. Giannis doesn't play. All right. Brooklyn, back-to-back. Chris doesn't play. Everyone's together for Oklahoma City. Best win of the year. L.A., they play together. They lose in double overtime. Very disappointing. Then you get to New Orleans. And, again, all three of them play. But as we get to the second half, Damian Lillard misses most of the fourth quarter, getting stitches in his lip, and pulls his groin in the fourth. So now he misses the next three games. Giannis Antetokounmpo pulls a hamstring or re-aggravates a hamstring in the Memphis game, clearly not healthy in that game. So they lose. He misses the Raptors game. Okay, everybody's back for the Knicks. They score 30 points in a quarter for the first time in a week. Everything's looking great. And then Chris Middleton gets hit in the face first by Dante DiVincenzo, and then 250-pound Isaiah Hartenstein falls on his head, bounces it off the court, breaks his teeth, and he's out. Like, you know, this is the bad part, JR, of the big three idea in the NBA. They take up so much salary. They are clearly the very best players. If they're not playing or if they're hampered, the team is just not as good. Like, you know, whatever people got all up in arms about Bobby Portis and Pat Connaughton earlier in the year, or, you know, Malik Beasley slumping right now. But look, those guys are meant to play 15 to 24 minutes, not 30 to 38, right? Like that's how these things are supposed to go. So is it as simple as, hey, if the big three, if Chris is able, you know, I don't know. I mean, Doc thought he was having some sort of dental surgery after the game. The Bucks, as an organization, wouldn't confirm that phrase. They just said he went to the dentist immediately after the game. I don't know. Maybe Chris is out now till the playoffs. You know, Giannis, we got to watch this hamstring here. So, yeah, JR, if they're not healthy, it's a huge problem. If they are healthy, they're still going to have two of the best players on the floor and three of the top five, top six in any given series. And that's going to maybe set them up for success. So it's a little bit of both, but they've got to get right. And there's only a couple weeks left to do it.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns, another example of a team that, you know, if your big three isn't healthy, it's a bit of a struggle. They're going to be a playoff team too, but they're going to be – you know, fighting to stay out of the play-in format, really, over in the Western Conference, which is a little bit of a different animal. If I were to be a conspiracy theorist and look at the standings in the Eastern Conference and say to myself, if the Bucks are, in fact, the two seed, they're lined up, at least, to wind up with the Miami Heat. Now, that's a very in-flux situation because of the play-in tournament. It could very easily be the 76ers, which would be a much more favorable matchup. I mean, it could even be, you know, well, it's going to be at this point, I would say it's going to be one of those two teams. Although the Pacers are only a game up there, they could be in the mix as well. If the Bucks drop to a three, they're going to play the Pacers, a team that I think you and I probably agree they Bucks should be favored to beat. No problem. But they've given them some problems this year. Indiana has. We know that going back to the Las Vegas, the midseason tournament. Is it possible that they are not interested in playing the Heat, that they don't mind if they lose some games because it gives them a matchup that they're more comfortable with? Or I guess even a better question is, are they just so dismissive of caring about that? You mentioned home court. Do they care about home court? We've said that in past years that it isn't as big a deal maybe as we think it is to a team that knows it's going to the playoffs and knows it can compete for a championship. Who cares if they have home? They did not have home court, of course, in the 2021 championship run for a couple of those key series, including the finals. So does that matter to them? And should it matter to us? Or are they thinking about who that matchup is going to be? And maybe they're just not as invested in winning because it doesn't necessarily help them. They can't be number one. So a win is either staying where they're at, and a loss is, you know, maybe getting somebody else. I don't know.
Unlike other years, no, JR, I think all that's off the table. They're 18-20 on the road, tied with Orlando for the worst road record among any playoff team. Most playoff teams are at least above 500, if not well above 500. So not being at Pfizer Forum, kind of a problem this year. And look, the Pacers have tiebreakers over the Magic, the Knicks, the Bucks. They play the Cavs in a couple days. So if the Bucks lose two games and the Pacers win two, the Bucks could be down to the sixth seed, JR. Like they have let this thing totally get away from them.
Yeah.
Now granted, they technically are in control, like beat Boston, beat Orlando, and you've got two games left and you're probably in good shape. But right now,
easier said than done. Yeah, I don't see them beating anybody right now, right?
So yeah, there's definitely no thought into matchups. There's no thought into just like, hey, we're cool. Like, they're, you know, if they lose even to Boston on Tuesday, who knows who's going to play for the Celtics? They're sort of like kind of half playing, half not. But you know, they've been a good enough team this year, JR, where even if Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or Drew Holiday or Porzingis sit, you know, their top 6-7 has been so good, they keep winning. So yeah, you know, they could definitely, you know, crater to a 5-6 spot here where there's no home court and they're on the road the entire time. So no, it's not going to be easy. They're going to have to play really hard, you know, in four games in what, 6 days? Two of which on the road, switching time zones. Yeah, JR, it's you know, they've got to go. They've got to win some games and not really care or worry about what's happening around the league.
3.5 games up on Philadelphia with four games to go for the 7 seed, which is a play-in spot in the Eastern Conference. They're not going to end up in the play-in tournament.
No, they clinched the playoff spot last night. So they're no worse than the 6.
Okay, that's
lots. But it's still, I mean, 6 is still in play if they keep losing games here.
Yeah. As I said, if they have a successful postseason, no one is going to remember this stretch of games. Conversely, if they're out in the first round again, or even the second round, people are going to talk about these games like that. That was when the championship window closed. And I know that's dramatic. That's probably even a little ridiculous, but they're going to remember this stretch as we knew things weren't there anymore when that happened. I obviously, part of this is litigating the decision to bring in Doc Rivers midway through the season. I will maintain that was the right call. And I think I will go to my grave maintaining that no matter what happens. I feel pretty confident that I think personally the move to Doc Rivers was the right call, was well thought out. And you've mentioned some of the challenges that his teams have faced, you know, not even mentioning the transition to, you know, a new head coach midway through the season, which is a challenge for all parties involved. Do you find yourself wondering how history is going to remember this? Like, we know it was a little bit of a panic move. I think we identified it as such on a previous podcast. It was a little bit of a panic move. They saw where this was heading and needed to correct course. Is it going to be a mistake? Like, do you think people are going to look back on this and say the Bucks really screwed up? They found themselves in a situation they didn't know what to do, and they made a move that ultimately did not help them win a championship or get closer to one.
I mean, look, that's how this year, wherever they fell short, other than the finals, I think would be viewed that way. But I think the way the Bucks saw it is, well, you know, 2 years in a row with the core, you run it back. And injuries to Giannis and Chris, Drew, for as good as he is, couldn't help make up for that lack of offense. And so John Horst tried to change that, right? Like, look, yeah, Giannis and Chris are hurt or managing injuries right now again. You know, what if one of that lingers into the first round? Damian Lillard's probably the better option to score 28 or 29 a game and help you get through that, right? So, but that's how it's always going to be judged. And I think that's part of why, you know, Adrian Griffin at the beginning of the year said there was a dark cloud over the team, and why Doc Rivers just this week says there's a heaviness around the team. Like, they all feel it. And it's not just like external stuff. It's internal. It's their own expectation. You know, so they're going to have to wear that, and we'll see. You know, it's hard to predict the future. You don't know how he'll react, how Damian Lillard will react, how ownership will react, you know, depending on when they get bounced. But all I'll say is this: look, if they lose, I just say, look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, JR. Like, last year, you know, they traded 5 picks for Rudy Gobert for this 2 big experiment. Well, Rudy missed all of camp. Karl-Anthony Towns missed most of the season. And the Wolves were just pilloried. You know, this is terrible. What a disaster of a trade. How could they do this? Everyone should get fired. They should trade Cat. This is brutal, awful. Well, guess what? Then they played together a little bit. They had a camp. And up until, if Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't get hurt this year, JR, they're the runaway number one in the West. Best defense in the league. Totally meshed, totally work. Like, not that you punt on the year, but it just, I think in basketball, JR, it just takes a lot of time for this stuff to truly work. I think if you look at the history of the league, these sort of like constructions of teams, they rarely win it all in their first year. You know, everyone likes to look at the Heat. Yeah, they made the finals that first year, but that was also 15 years ago, right? That's a long time ago.
Back then, there weren't as many MVP candidates floating around. I mean, the talent is very distributed right now.
So, you know, like, I'm not saying that to mitigate any disappointment or for anyone to not feel like they let go of something, that, because that's all fair, right? But I don't know if you could look back and say it's a mistake, because it's still taking a shot at having, you know, 2 top 75 players. And JR, like, what's the conversation if they would have run it back with the same group for 3 straight years and they're in this boat again, right? So, or they're sort of, you know, a 50-win team at this point, or 51, but they're still behind Boston. Like, I don't think Drew Holiday and Grayson Allen have this team winning 57 games. They won 58 all of last year, right? And they were trying to win the 1 seed. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think anything other than a finals appearance is going to bring all of those questions, as you just said.
Yeah.
But, you know, the final judgment on this group, I don't think can be made until it's all over, whenever that may be.
Yeah, what you're saying leads me right to my next question, which is to ask about the 2024-25 season. And I know that's not what people are thinking about yet, but can they be better next year? Is this the last window, because I still, you bring up the Timberwolves example. They're still quite a bit younger than what the Bucks are rocking right now. And I don't know if there's questions about whether or not Damian Lillard is here next year, but you still get the sense, whether it's between the lines or overt or whatever, that it hasn't been smooth. It hasn't been comfortable. And, you know, I think barring something kind of crazy, I think he is a Milwaukee Buck next year. But can this team still be a championship contender next year? I know they're a playoff team next year, or at least competing to be a playoff team. But I certainly wouldn't sit here and say, yeah, that's a team that even if things go terribly wrong, they've got all the components to be really, really good next year. I don't believe that's true. You know, at some point they are, in fact, a really old basketball team. So how do you look at that? I mean, do you think that maybe that darkness, that heaviness is like, this is it, guys? If it doesn't happen now, it may not happen?
No, I mean, obviously it's hard to say like what anyone feels like in an off season. I mean, Giannis extended. That's, you know, I think he's over the years proven as, and that's what he said, as long as this team is trying, that's good for him, and they have tried, right? And I think there's a part of them, let's say we were to get to the summer, I think they'd all realize, look, there's a reason they made a coaching change, JR. And I think they'd all understand, wait a minute, we didn't actually practice any of this stuff until January. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know. I think as long as Dame, you know, feels comfortable and happy in the way things are going, I think he's the one player we're not sure of in terms of where he's at, you know, because everyone else has been here. You know, there's a lot of other implications and tax stuff and maybe some other decisions to be made. But no, I mean, I think as long as you have those two guys, and regardless of what's then fit around them, JR, like, they're still going to have an excellent, excellent chance to win a championship, you know, whatever the ancillary pieces are, just because Giannis is going to be, you know, an MVP caliber player. Damian Lillard's an all-star, all-NBA caliber player. And then after that, you know, it's you know, we'll see what John Horst or the front office can do. So, no, I don't think it's as dire as is what it might be, unless, of course, one of the stars decides, you know, that was it. But I feel like there's too much unknown and too much potential that they never got to. Mm-hmm. Even if they win it all, JR, they're still going to say, wow, like, imagine a whole training camp under Doc Rivers, and we're going to do this stuff from day one as opposed to middle of the season. You know what I mean? Like, they're smart guys. Like, I think they know that there's so much left there. They're just trying to win this thing now with, you know, little pieces of it, right? And trying to pull it together and rely on a lot of talent. So we'll just, you know, just have to see how that goes.
Would you classify Damian Lillard's season as disappointing? Now, there's some caveats there. Of course, like, on the surface, those are great numbers. He's still a tremendous player. But he isn't, you know, and there are many reasons for this. He has not had the production that he has had the last couple of years. You know, some of that is new system, age, what he's been asked to do, getting comfortable. I mean, all that stuff we've talked about. But now that we're close to the end of the season, and then maybe the answer is none of it matters until the playoffs, then we'll decide what's disappointing and what's not. But I guess, how would you evaluate what we've seen from Damian Lillard in year one with the Milwaukee Bucks?
I mean, it's interesting. I don't think we've seen, and he'd probably agree with this, I don't think we've seen his absolute best. You know, I mean, I think that's, and it's not just like the scoring, you know, the 24 and a half points a game is right around his career average. You know, yeah, he's a guy who's hit 30 a couple times, but, you know, he's finished top 10 MVP voting, averaging 25 a game. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's the fact that he's, you know, that his shooting has come around. 35% is it as good as last year? No, it's down from his career average, so he hasn't shot the ball great this year. You know, he's taken three less shots a game than the last couple seasons. I think that's part of it. But look, he's played at an all-star level, you know, and it's, we've seen why they've gotten him, you know, with some big fourth quarters, JR, and you know, leading this team and scoring points when it matters, getting the free throw line when it matters. But it's been uneven, you know, and I think that's just, again, goes to what previous conversation. They just haven't, you know, if really the emphasis of the two-man game started in Doc Rivers' first sort of shoot-around in late January, man, you know, so much was left on the table. So, yeah, I think it's been uneven, but you've seen the flashes of what it could be. And again, as to the earlier point, Jar, I think that's hopeful and intriguing for them just now going into this playoff, but even in the future.
Couple further down the roster, a couple questions. Andre Jackson Jr., if you are a visitor of Bucks Twitter, you know how beloved Andre Jackson Jr. is. And he's an interesting player. You know, we've seen great energy, great defense from him at points this year. Doc Rivers doesn't seem too inclined to give him a ton of minutes. And, you know, like he's still a guy who's pretty close to the end of the bench. It's kind of understandable, but he has flashed when he's in there. Do you think he merits more of a look? Do you think he merits more playing time, or is it just not his time yet?
Look, I think those conversations were fair to have in the, early part of the year. I think at this point, like the AJ Green, Marjan, Ajax minutes, I mean, it's a wrap. Like, as soon as Doc got here, they traded for Patrick Beverley, like, and mm-hmm. then they signed Danilo Gallinari. I get it. Like, and yes, he provided a spark a couple games ago, and helped them come back. Doc sort of used him as sort of motivation for the other guys. Like, look at this guy playing really hard, you know? But it's just, you know, at this point, JR, it's like Andre Jackson Jr. is like, is he going to play 25 minutes over Pat Connaughton? I'm sure someone's listening to this and say, yes.
Yes, you're going to have
people like, at this point, like, I mean, I don't think he'd ever play 25 minutes because he might fall out. You know what I mean? Like, and he has to shoot a little more than he does. So, yeah, there's some good. There's some potential. I think the young guys, JR, I'm doing air quotes for the listeners, backup quarterback in most other cities than Green Bay, right? They're the most favorite players. And I think, JR, once this is the part of having veterans and expectations. Like, you've seen these guys. You know their warts. Maybe you're tired of them. And so there's this like new unknown thing. Look, AJ Green's the young guy. Green's the young guy that Doc picked. So that's it, you know. and Marjan is a guy. He's been hurt now this for weeks now, JR. So that's been a part of it. But even before that, you know, this is the third head coach that didn't give Marjan minutes. So at some point, you know, those guys are making that decision. Jackson Jr., I think, can definitely give them that defensive jolt, that offensive rebounding jolt, and maybe Doc will get him in for a couple brief moments. But again, once Pat Bev is back and healthy, I think he wants Pat Bev to be that guy. And we'll just have to see if he can be and kind of what happens from here. But yeah, I think, you know, the young guy thing is sort of that ship sailed. And now that they have to win some of these games, I just don't think Doc's going to trust those guys to help them win these games.
In the immediate aftermath of the Knicks loss, you saw Dante DiVincenzo have a really nice game, 26 points to help the Knicks win. Of course, Jalen Brunson was the main ingredient, but Dante's been pretty good. And I was trying to kind of unpack this on the fly, the dominoes that would have fallen if they had decided not to trade DiVincenzo in 2022, not to bring in Serge Ibaka, who, as we know, made modest impact, if we're being kind. I feel like John Horst, I think, hits way more than he misses. I don't think that's controversial. Maybe it is right now as people are very down on the Bucks, but like, you know, the guy has a great track record. I feel like they'd be okay if they had not made that trade. That would have, and if they didn't make that trade, I do think they would have traded Dante somewhere else. Like, there's no way he stays on this roster to this point. But I ask you, you know, is there any scenario where they maybe could have kept him on this roster and watched him develop into the player he is, because it sure seems like it'd be nice to still have him, Jim.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's 27, right? He's sort of hitting his prime, if you will. But yeah, like, look, at that moment in time, Dante was looking for a really, really big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And coming off, you know, the championship season with the foot injury, you know, played, you know, 17 games with the Bucks only at that point, right? Didn't play very well at all. And so now you're in that spot, right? Like, what do you do when you're like, well, we can't pay him off of this? And, you know, that at least what he was asking for. And it is a two-way street there, JR. Like, Dante wanted some stuff and he had every right to ask for it. Plays in Sacramento and plays a little better because he, you know, gets that time and what, signs essentially a one-year deal in Golden State for a couple million dollars to sort of revitalize things. And he does that. And the Knicks, you know, kind of come in and give him the deal he looked for, 4 years, $50 million. That's about what he was looking for 3 years prior. Would he have turned into a volume three-point shooter if he didn't play with Steph and those Warriors? I mean, if you go back and Google and some of the stories, he learned a lot from Steph and Clay and those guys. If he'd stayed in Milwaukee, is he doing that? I don't know. He might not even say he is because, you know, he took that sort of detour through Golden State, which maybe changed things for him. So, yeah, you know, it's an interesting, especially since he just played. He hits 8 threes against his former team. Some backbreakers in the fourth quarter. You know, maybe the Bucks have to deal with him again, you know, in a playoff series, JR. And you know, sure, it's just another one of those, right, because you've had sort of a run through of Grayson Allen and Malik Beasley since then. But I'd argue that, you know, Dante's obviously a better defender. Offensively, those guys are all about the same. So, you know, it's kind of a half dozen of one and maybe eight in another, depending how you want to look at it.
Hey, you mentioned Golden State. They're the 10th seed in the West. That feels really weird to say that. Yeah, second year in a row, I wouldn't call it an existential crisis. They won a million titles and they are, you know, any falling action is no one's going to feel bad about that. But the teams with the big three, like, I don't know if it's really working as much as you would think it does across the league. I mean, you can't really call Boston a team that has a big three. Does Denver have a big three? Like, not really. These are the teams that are thriving. Oklahoma City, not really. Like, the teams that are thriving are bigger than three players, are bigger than their stars. I wonder about the Bucks. What are you seeing from the, I won't call them the fringes of the roster. We're even talking about some starters, Malik Beasley, Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton. Some nights, I mean, Bobby Portis has, I think, been pretty good. You know, some nights he just carries this team, actually. But I don't know if the Bucks are getting enough from that group, enough from the guys that aren't, you know, the three alphas. So what have you seen lately? And do you project that maybe when we get to the playoffs, we'll see that turn a corner a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's, well, on a broader level, you're right. I mean, the Suns are, you know, on the fringe of the play-in tournament. The Lakers, Warriors, I don't even know if the Lakers have a third star. They don't. You know, they've got two. You know, the Warriors.
No shade to Austin Reeves, but.
Yeah. You know, the Warriors dynasty is coming to an end and they're sort of in a transition period too, but you're right. Like, you know, Kristaps Porzingis is paid like a big third guy, you know, in Boston, but is he that? I don't know, but you know, you're right. Like, they're kind of you've got Drew Holiday as sort of your fifth option on offense, making $37 million. So I think it's, if he was a part of a big three in Milwaukee, is he automatically discounted as that in Boston? I don't know. I mean, the Celtics, though, to their credit, have a you're right, they have a bigger or stronger five, more highly paid than the Bucks. Well, and that's you know what, that's not even true, because Brooke Lopez is making $25 million, right? So $26 million. Brooke Lopez is paid really, really well. But yeah, the Magic, the Knicks, the Cavs, the Pacers, even the 76ers, Timberwolves are a text. Now, these are all text teams, but you're right. You're not, you know, necessarily putting that the sort of star stratosphere around them. And now to your point about the rest of the Bucks, this all goes back to, though, the big three for the Bucks. Like, if Dame, Giannis, and Chris are playing 40 minutes, that means Jay Crowder, Pat Connaughton, Bobby Portis, Pat Bev are filling in the 8 minutes, right? The 24 total that those guys aren't on the court. And frankly, they're going to be better in those spots because now they're Bobby is playing with Giannis and with Dame, or now Bobby's playing with Brooke and with Chris. And you're those guys are just going to be better. I mean, you know, Malik Beasley's something right now. He's had a great year. So it's kind of unfortunate for him that his shot has sort of fallen off here at the end of the season. But, you know, shot still looks good. He's had a lot of in and outs. Kind of one of those things. But again, if you're counting on Beasley to carry you to a championship, like that's not – nobody's doing that.
Right.
Right? Not even the Bucks. Like they want him to make some threes and maybe he'll catch a heater like Bryn Forbes, you know, and he'll help you win a series. Grayson Allen against the Bulls, right? When Chris got hurt, Grayson Allen went nuts. And everyone got mad at Grayson like after the fact. But no, like that's what the fifth starter, the role players do. They need to help for a series or a game, right? And be steady. The other guys, the stars, are the ones who win you the thing. And so I think the Bucks role players, yeah, are if the core four are healthy and playing, I think it all works together. It's just when you have to start stretching those guys maybe beyond their capability. I mean, there's a reason they're role players. There's a reason they're bench players, and it just sort of exposes more things than you'd like.
Bryn Forbes, what a name. Just tremendous that he is. He has such a small but significant part in Bucks history. I am going to put on my tinfoil hat and throw something bananas at you. And I want you to tell me, this is like when you watch a science fiction show and you're like, is there any like thread to this that's possibly true? The Bucks have two draft picks in 2024, at least for now, which is rare. Usually they don't have that much action going on, but they do have Portland's second round draft pick. Bronny James just announced that he is going pro or entering the transfer portal or whatever, changing his circumstances. LeBron James has said, I would love to play with my son. LeBron's coming to the end of his career. He can opt out of his contract with the Lakers and presumably sign for whatever he wants, you know, whatever is allowed by the cap. And when you have that much time on your resume, would the Bucks, knowing that they're not like a second round draft pick away from, you know, those guys aren't going to be difference makers for them, draft Bronny James? Get LeBron on the cheapest possible deal. I don't know what the machinations would be and how that impacts the roster, and you know, see where that goes. Let's discuss. Is there any science to my science fiction on this?
I mean, I'll play along. Like, who knows? Why not?
Yes.
Look, you always Rich Paul, Bronny's agent, you know, said I think at one point it's really not about. Like an NBA future is really not about being a lottery pick or anything like that. It's about the fit and the team. Cause I think they are realistic enough to it's not just hate, you know, on LeBron James Jr. that, you know, his shot's not there. Obviously yeah,
he's not an NBA
player. He's even playing is amazing. After his cardiac incident at the start of the year. So I think they kind of know, you know, maybe it's a weak draft class. Tyler Kolek might benefit from some of that too with a first round, you know, chance. But for Bronny, yeah, I mean, why not? Right? Like the second rounder is not really going to do much for you. The Bucks have a relationship now with Rich Paul. You know, he engineered Chris Livingston getting to the Bucks with the last pick in the draft, pretty much told everyone, don't draft Chris Livingston. The Bucks draft him number 58 and give him pretty good guaranteed salary for someone at that position. Kind of doing some, you know, goodbye you type of thing. So, you know, John Horst has got that relationship with Clutch and Rich Paul.
Let's go.
It's just, I don't know though, I'll be honest, if the Dame Giannis LeBron signs for a minimum. That's what it would have to be. And that means he's giving up a $50 million option. Look, man, he might be a billionaire, but $50 million is still $50 million there.
Can't play with your son is priceless, Jim.
But why not? Why not give it a shot? If you're not going to trade your swap and your second round pick plus one of the beloved young guys plus whatever else to reshuffle and remake the roster, then yeah, why not? Throw those darts.
I just watched the three body problem on Netflix. And so I'm thinking a little bit in this mode, like this seems completely like nonsense, gobbledygook, the way that they're solving this problem. But like, you know, I found myself reading, could this happen? Could this happen article? And, you know, no, but maybe it's I do think I'm obviously this is tongue in cheek to some degree, but I do think a team is going to think about that. You know, Bronny James 100%. Is a very interesting commodity. I not to reduce him to that, but there's some stuff there that I could see some team at least exploring this avenue of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is widely panned as a very, very weak draft class. I think guys who are going to be picked in the second round in next year's draft or 2 years ago's draft might have been undrafted. Agreed. It's one of those cycles. So what are you doing with some of those? Like, you know, why not?
The eighth player in this draft is not going to be a difference maker, most likely. So why not?
Yeah. So look, if you're thinking of drafting a 19-year-old who's 6'4", 200 something pounds and has clearly some, I think as I've read, defensive potential for sure. Okay. You know, and then you hope you can teach a shot and some of the other stuff. Hey, you know, it's an interesting play by LeBron James Sr. to sort of put that out in the water mm-hmm. and in the world. Who knows? Maybe he wants to play in LA and then finally, you know, when he becomes a guy who can only play 20 minutes, that's when this happens. And it's,
sure.
it's 5 years down the line. Who knows?
Yeah. Bucks have shown that they don't mind bringing a player on board who's got some familial ties. Mm-hmm. I'm not throwing shade about it, but the Bucks are not about like that.
It's the thing they like to do.
I am further along now, convinced that this is something they could do now that we've discussed it. I'm talking myself into it. Before we go, I want you to discuss a little bit about your Point Forward series. Of course, the Point Forward podcast, aptly named in reference to the history of point forwards in the Milwaukee Bucks organization. You did a two-part series at jsonline.com that kind of looked at the position. And I'm just curious, like if for people who don't know anything about that, what can they expect when they open that up?
Yeah, over at jsonline.com, it's the first one is sort of who invented it.
It's controversial.
What's really interesting is that, look, it, like anything, you know, it's probably a mixture of names and faces and players and coaches. But what we know for sure, JR, is, you know, Wisconsin and Milwaukee had their fingers in this stew and helped create it, whether it be Tom Mesalky, who Madison native, went to high school at Wayland Academy in Beaver Dam, was a head coach in Houston in the late 70s and had to, you know, some injuries and some stuff happened, a weird trade happened, and all of a sudden he needs to kind of invent on the fly. Out in Seattle, John Johnson, a Mesmer star, mm-hmm. is sort of used in this way by Lenny Wilkins at about the same time. No one's calling it point forward. And then you get to Marcus Johnson, 40 years this spring, JR, 40 years ago, Bucks Nets game 3, Marcus starts bringing the ball up the court to help the Bucks get out of that series. And that's where he says he came up with the phrase to Don Nelson. Of course, Don, you know, I reached him in Hawaii. Don's feeling good. He's like, I don't know. I'm not getting into that. So it's kind of a fun look back at the start of this. But obviously Paul Pressey and then down to Giannis. And then, yeah, the second part, JR, was just Giannis was the next point forward. And then 10 years later, he's kind of broken that. Like it's this sort of positionless game now where mm-hmm. he even struggles. He's like, he tells me I'm a point, I'm a 7 foot point forward. And then he thinks about it and he was like, I don't know. I'm, you know, I don't know what I am. So really interesting stuff. Giannis kind of walks us through his career arc there in part two with some good stuff from him as always. So yeah, it's you know, the Point Forward podcast, it's definitely Milwaukee and Wisconsin sort of born and bred and you know, expanded with Bucks players and Wisconsin and Milwaukee players and coaches.
He is Jim Ozarski, Milwaukee Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We will do one more of these, I think, as we get set for the playoffs. You know, once we know the opponent, we'll have to break that down a little bit. You know, I will ask you one more question. If we don't know the opponent, so that's a big part of this, but will it surprise you if the Milwaukee Bucks lose a first round series again? You know, last year they were the one seed and they lost. Would it surprise you if history repeated in that regard?
Yes. Obviously, with the caveat that everybody's back and healthy and
sure,
oh yeah, doesn't get, of course. Yes, it would, because I feel like Giannis would not let that happen. And what I mean by that is, I think for all of they're trying to do the right things, play the right way, share the ball. I don't know if Giannis could handle that, and if it push came to shove, I think he would just take over, and then they deal with fixing that going into round two. That's just me. Like, if they're playing the Pacers or the 76ers and Joel Embiid or the Heat again, like, it's just I just don't know if I think he could probably dominate those series. If they somehow slide to a matchup with the Knicks, I think that's a team effort. And it's going to be six or seven games of just a dogfight. Same thing with the Cavs. But I don't know. I think there's a pride factor there, JR, that will go. And again, they just have the best players. And it just would be hard for me to think teams with the best players that are healthy don't win a series. Like, that's not usually how it works. So, yeah, I think it would really surprise me if they were one and done, if totally healthy, regardless of opponent.
Man, Doc Rivers will be trending so hard on Twitter if they lose that first round series. It'll read like an own goal. Like, he didn't have to do this, and then he came back and made it worse. The thing that everyone holds against him. I also do not. I will be surprised if they lose a first round series, no matter the opponent. I don't know how much I believe in the switch flipping concept. I do believe there is a switch to flip here that the Bucks probably still have access to, but man, a lot of faith being tested with how they have played here down the stretch. Four more games starting on Tuesday night. It's a tough Boston, Orlando twice, Oklahoma City. That is not how you want to finish if you are not playing well. Granted, Boston's playoff destiny is kind of sewn up. Oklahoma City's is pretty close to sewn up. So I don't know what you're getting, but still, it's a tough finish. Again, Jim Ozarski, Milwaukee Bucks reporter. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.